Little Bob here. This summer, shop the latest small space solutions at Bob's Discount Furniture. From retro chic bedroom sets to stylish space-conscious Bob-o-pedic sofas, it's all at Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
All right, we're here. It's the Gang of Three. How you doing, Pete?
I'm doing all right.
Well, that's good to hear. Lane, how you doing, sir?
Still vertical, so everything's good.
That's as much as you can ask for. It's as much as you can ask for. Well, we know what day it is. It is 3 days from the NFL draft starting on Thursday, which means 3 days away from the 2026 OBR Draft Cave. The world famous Draft Cave will be opening at 7:30 actually on Thursday with a cast of thousands. We'll get people involved from all across the OBR in this show. And we're going to have Fred. He's going to be in Berea monitoring the situation there. We're going to have Park. He's going to be in Pittsburgh talking to people at the draft. And it's going to be a pretty exciting time. And we hope, obviously, that you join us. Kind of a big week for the Browns already. You know, draft week is here, obviously. But last week we had Andrew Berry's pre-draft presser on the 16th, and he all but confirmed that the Browns are, quote-unquote, almost guaranteed to try to trade down from number six, but he also refused to close the door on taking a quarterback. So we're going to talk about that. We also have tomorrow the voluntary veteran minicamp opening, which is sort of the first real on-field moment of the Munkin era. And then we had a little bit of AFC North news in the last 24 hours as the Giants traded Dexter Lawrence to the Cincinnati Bengals. Lane, does this make you look at the Bengals in a different light, sir?
Well, it's going to definitely help them up front. He's an outstanding player. Cincinnati was deficient there, so you know you're giving up the 10th pick in the draft for the 28-year-old veteran tackle who is could be a stalwart in that defensive line and just one area of need for the Bengals. But we'll still have to see what happens with them when it comes to the secondary and see how all that comes together. But it definitely was an immediate improvement for that team.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete, what do you think about that deal? Do you think pick number 10 was a worthy offset for Dexter Lawrence or too much?
To me, I know everybody's saying the Giants made out on this. I think the Giants got fleeced. I think 10th pick in this draft for Mr. Lawrence is crazy. Dexter Lawrence, so long as he's healthy, and there's the question with his elbow. The Bengals defense fell apart when they lost DJ Reader. And DJ Reader, I've watched DJ Reader literally beat the Browns by himself in the game. Dexter Lawrence provides the same impact, arguably better. And yeah, you can argue, well, he's gonna lose traction because of age. Okay, maybe. I'm not convinced that that's gonna happen for a while. But for what the Bengals need, he fixes the defensive line, gives them that big time impact. They've got talent in the secondary. They just haven't had it enough up front. And I fully expect them to, like, do something smart. Or, well, I may stumble into something smart by taking Jacob Brown from Texas Tech in round two. And all of a sudden, they have a defense to go with an offense, and they could well be the favorite in the AFC North. Well, two of the three teams have questions. I'd say all three teams of their opponents in the division are trying to figure out what they're going to do in the middle of their lines. Mm-hmm. I don't play center for the Ravens. And the Steelers have questions at guard. The Browns have questions at guard and or center, depending on how they play it. So yeah, to me, it's a game changer. I think, you know, everybody talks about, well, the Browns should trade Myles Garrett for picks and all. This is why you don't do that. Those players are just so valuable. And I have very little faith in the Giants, particularly Joe Shane, to get this right and pay this off all. I think the Bengals are going to make out really, really well. I think the Giants are going to regret it.
Lane, does this put a little bit more pep in your step in terms of improving that interior offensive line for the Browns? or are we?
Well, let me hit on something that was just discussed when we talk about that trade real quick. I agree with Pete. I think that they could have and should have gotten more for a player of that caliber, especially the 10th pick in this draft. But what it's done is now the Giants holding that pick at 10 has rattled a couple team cages, because it puts them right back in the opportunity to deal with the safety, defensive line, and wide receiver issues the teams are trying to get up to, which includes Dallas, Kansas City. There's about four teams now that when this deal was made and the Giants jumped in front of them, got them a little, got the wheels turning, I would say, a little bit. I can say that I know that with certainty that the Browns have talked to a couple teams. Don't know how that's going to go, and they're not going to tell us, but that's what's going on. But, you know, that's what I got on that situation with that Giants trade. I think they lost that battle, but I think they can – they have an opportunity to win that war by holding that 5 and 10 pick to make some significant moves and damage to their team or add capital in deals. As far as the Browns and their interior offensive line and the things that they've done there, I think what they've done is help solidify an area. And so they've gotten guys in there who play more to the scheme that they want to run, which is going to be some power zone. I question their ability to be wide. I'm not sure that they have that capability yet with what's there. We'll see what happens when we get into this draft, because I fully inspect an offensive tackle and a guard center guy who's versatile selected by this team. So it's what happens is that they've already addition by subtraction with the Browns across the offensive line with what they've done. I would have been really nice that Joel Petonio decides he wants to play. He's still up in the air. He doesn't know when he do. He's taking his time to rest and enjoy his family. That would be a big bonus for the Browns if he would come back even for a year to help solidify and get that line in place for what they're trying to do. It's interesting what Cincinnati did with the defensive, getting the tackle Lawrence in there. I think that's an upgrade from where they were with Reader. I believe that if they could have gotten both of those guys in place there in Cincinnati, that would have been a wrecking zone for that team in the defense up front and would help the secondary. But as far as the Browns are concerned, I think that they're making the associated moves that are required for them to solidify themselves and build upon what they've done up to this point.
The issue is that the Bengals are predictable, like in terms of how they draft. They don't, obviously, it's unpredictable that they made this move for Dexter Lawrence. It's so out of their wheelhouse. They never move. And not only do they never move, but they generally draft for need. So all these teams around the Bengals could sit there and go, well, we know they're going to take a defensive player, and we're pretty confident we can narrow down who they're going to take if they're available. The Giants are unpredictable because they could theoretically, you know, everybody's putting them on Sonny Styles and Caleb Downs, and then all of a sudden now they've got two picks and there's all these people saying, well, they might take Jordan Tyson. That completely shakes up like the confidence of teams that are picking behind the Giants, thinking they thought, oh, well, we had no problem if, say, for example, we wanted an offensive lineman, we knew the Bengals weren't going to take one, the Giants could, or right, anything else. So that part is to be determined. As far as the offensive line stuff goes, look, I mean, the argument you could make in favor of Andrew Berry was that they didn't have the picks, the necessary premium picks to really invest up front. They didn't do it last year, and they did well. Mason Graham's a really good player. Quinshon Judkins is a really good player. Carson Schwechter is a stud. It's great, but you now have the picks. Now you have the, I don't want to say desperation, but you certainly have the impetus to address it, which is why I'm hoping to do two of those three picks in the two of the first three picks are on the offensive line. I hope they address their tackle, and I hope they get – my preference would be guard, because I think guards are more difficult to acquire than centers, and Elgton Jenkins can slide right in the center. And more than anything, you're not guessing where these guys are going to go. If you make those moves, it puts them right position. Elgton Jenkins said at his press conference, help us out. I'm fine to play wherever you want, but just make a decision quickly so we can start get going, get gelling and all that stuff. So when you're overhauling the entire front, getting them settled quickly is going to make it easier for them to be more impactful, even though it's a whole new group.
And, you know, just to couple on piggyback that with what Pete said, this Giants move is one that could really shake up that portion of the draft from five down, because now you're going to have teams that are going to want to get up there. They feel that they need to get up there. And this is where this whole draft can get really crazy, and which I'm not sure how that sits with the Browns, how to play into it. If they hold the sixth pick, I believe that Andrew Berry is going to be more than willing to deal that pick, because there is going to be a team that's going to value that pick more than what the value of what it really is, even though people will say that this isn't a good draft, or, you know, those first 10 to 12 guys aren't the studs that you normally see. Teams become desperate and fall in love with guys. And one person that was named by Pete, Jordan Tyson, is going to make noise here. Everybody was screaming and thinking, oh, this guy's going to be sitting there at 24, and you're going to have a chance to get him. I don't believe that's going to be the case at all. I believe he's going to go much higher than that.
Good.
Because he's talented.
He's good. Look, there's no question about his ability. But
you just don't know when he's going to be healthy.
Right. Well, you can get the deep dive into the whole biomechanics stuff that will scare the crap out of you. But just knee and then hamstrings. And if the Giants take him, it's Jordan Tyson versus Meadowlands turf. And I don't love his chances there. Like,
yeah, that's not a good mix.
So, you know, and I come back to this. It's the whole Cedric Tillman thing. People go, well, I can't stand Cedric Tillman. He's never on the field. You want to gamble even bigger with that and have the same potential issue with Tyson? The ability is not a question. He's really good. But yep, you need guys who are on the field. And the physicality is not going to be easier at the NFL, and the schedule is not going to get shorter. So it scares the crap out of me. Nothing would make me happier than the Giants taking him at five and eliminating that as a consideration, and pushing more talent that I am interested down to the Browns, or pushing guys down that I think teams want to trade up for. The other thing I would keep an eye on with this whole thing is if the Giants are legitimately in the market, let's say Jordan Tyson goes at five, that puts a lot more pressure on teams like the Chiefs and the Rams.
Yep.
The Rams are a team that has been linked consistently with Jordan Tyson. Whether or not that's accurate, that has been a common link. The Chiefs are a team that's been linked to him potentially. If they feel pressure to go up and get somebody, the Browns are more than happy to take a phone call and take some of those assets to move down. So, you know, the Giants making the move they did, I think, opens up more potential for trade. And then at the same time, we could see this thing go right down the list, and nobody trades anything, and we just make picks. But, you know, when these type of moves, these trades are largely had been discussed basically since the combine. But this type of shakeup late in the process can get guys nervous, to Lane's point. And if you're patient and you can stick to your guns, I think Andrew Berry has been good at this. He could do really well.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I'm not concerned about Andrew Berry in the slightest. I believe that the organizational shift that has happened over the last year or so, where the personnel and they eliminated a factor that was involved in everything. And I think what we're seeing now is you're seeing more of the football people in the football aspect than you did before, where you had, it's just called the way it is. Paul DePodesta was involved in everything, and he was involved in how they picked, involved in how they did all this and how they planned. And I believe that's another addition by subtraction for this organization, because now you got the football guys doing football, and they're listening to their football guys, their coaches, and they're attacking areas that they want to see. And that's what you're going to see here. So as far as Andrew Berry's concerned, I'm not concerned or have any reservations. And that's just simply because this organization is on a path of identifying and attacking talent. Now, another point that Pete made when we talked about the Giants and talked about Jordan Tyson and the Rams. The Rams are another team that's on Mekhi Lemon. So it makes it interesting, because the pressure of wanting somebody like that, and I think that this guy with the Rams would be phenomenal. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because, you know, pressure makes teams do things. The Rams were a team that were looking for Ty Simpson as a potential selection to be an heir apparent, maybe. And now you've got other teams involved in that mix. And, you know, Arizona's one is can trade down and get themselves in position to pick up somebody like that. But that move what the Giants did and how it could shake things up and get people bouncing around is just going to make it really interesting because it's going to make Mekhi Lemon more valuable. Everybody's all over Tate that he's the safe guy. Well, when do you just say, I want the safe guy? Or does he drop because you have these other guys that, you know, have some phenomenal talent that can be more of a big play type maker rather than the consistent plus very good type receiver that Tate is? So this whole wide receiver bunch is going to become a mess, and I think this trade plays into it, and I think Dallas is going to be shaky because they're going to want to move up because they want that pass rusher or they want that defensive back, and defensive backs could end up being more valuable than they ever have in this draft. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, and I want to keep listening to the noise over the next 72 hours or so because it's starting to pick up things.
So on the one hand, there's a little bit more pressure on potentially the wide receiver market with everything that's changed. On the other hand, there's also potentially a little bit more pressure on the offensive tackle market in Pittsburgh because they, you know, Broderick Jones had neck fusion surgery. There's apparently been a setback. They don't love him anyway, so they don't need more incentive to move on from him. I personally, part of me thinks they're going to lean into Dylan Cook and take somebody just later to put behind him and see if they can't, you know, get something that can beat him out eventually. But if they're 21 and they take an offensive tackle off the board, that's another, you know, guy off the board. So that's another consideration. Now, whether or not this trade actually goes down, because we've heard this trade, I can't even, how long have we been talking about this notion of Dallas going 12 and 20? But what's really fascinating about this with what the Giants have done and this whole Steelers thing, 12 and 20 sounds really good to be able to do the two things that we're talking about, which is potentially wide receiver, you know, Mekhi Lemon or otherwise. Let's go with Mekhi Lemon. and then get to 20, and then you get in front of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Philadelphia Eagles, who are also another team that could potentially take an offensive tackle and get your guy. I take a Hanichor, but that's me. But either way, there's a nice little pocket where the Browns can get the appropriate value to me. I think, well, not to me. I'd be happy with Lemon at six. But I think more from a more consensus point of view, if the Browns were to get Lemon slash Concepcion slash whoever, whatever wide receiver you like that I like, more importantly, at 12, back like me, I think most people will be like, yeah, I didn't love this guy at six, but if they got to 12 and 20 and got a little sweetener, I really like what the Browns were able to do. Now, whether or not that's actually going to happen, I don't know, but it does just happens to work out as this really sweet pocket for them to be able to attack both the things they want to attack.
Well, it is interesting with the Dallas thing, and what I heard is there was this session. I wouldn't say how deep it was because I don't know, but I do know that in these deals and numbers that keep popping up in Dallas with Cleveland getting 12 and 20, the Browns have reservations about moving that number 39, which makes things interesting because while it may not be top end and loaded, there's depth in these areas for this team to be able to select. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I know the Browns don't prefer dealing out of 39 in a deal like that. I agree with Pete. It would be wise for the Browns to get ahead of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, if possible, if it's the thing isn't cost prohibitive. Because I fully believe that if the board falls anything like we look at in Philadelphia's needs, a tackle just stands out. So Cleveland's sitting there at 24, even if they do the 12 and 20 to get out of Philadelphia. And Philadelphia would likely call the Browns if the Browns jumped in front of them. to see what they could deal. So this thing has the opportunity to just build along the way, just depending what's, what goes down at six. I just think there's so much talent out there. And we're talking, Pete just named the right tackle. I believe the philosophy that as long as it's the right player, a tackle's a tackle.
Yeah, I mean, as far as a Honiture goes, look, my evaluation, I think he could play on either side. It really just a question of where you want to put him. But, you know, long-term, short-term, Titus Howard to me is a short-term answer. Him and Elton Jenkins, I would move to accommodate longer-term pieces. So yep. Get a guard they like. I'm going to put Jenkins at center. If they get a tackle they like and they want to put him on the right side, I'm going to put Titus Howard to the left. That is, to me, I want to get a home for the guys that I feel are long-term fixtures before I worry about the short-term issue. I get it from the Browns standpoint, not wanting to deal 39 until you get a look at it, you know, heading into day two or the board's going to look like at the end of round one, because you don't want to be in a situation where you gave up that pick and all of a sudden you're sitting there going, oh man, you know, somebody we loved is sitting there. You want to give yourself that option. The other part about that is it's always a question of, you know, how desperate is Dallas? Is it a question where you can do 6 and 70 for 12 and 20 or, you know, some sort of pick swap or whatever? And the question of if Dallas doesn't want to give up 20, they can absolutely give me their 2027 first round pick and I will be perfectly happy to take that. Now, is Dallas going to be interested in doing that? We shall see. But, you know, if Dallas really wants to move up, I mean, yeah, I mean, the Browns are motivated to move down, but they are the player in this that's stopping you from getting the thing you want. So you're still going to have to meet their price, or you're going to have to be satisfied with rolling the dice and hoping that things work out for you where you're at. And maybe they do, but Jerry Jones isn't getting younger, and he wants to get the guys he wants to get. He wants to make the moves he wants to get, you know, to put the defense back on track. You've got Dak Prescott. You've got CeeDee Lamb. You've got, you know, nobody seems to be interested in George Pickens. But if you can get that defense to be average, all of a sudden you're really interesting, particularly when one of your rivals, not that anyone was necessarily thinking the Giants were a playoff team, but has taken away potentially the biggest difference maker they had on defense until Abdul Carter gets up to speed. So Dallas is probably sitting there looking at this and going, it's our time to operate. Now, they've still got Philadelphia to contend with, who's a really good team. But Dallas has to be looking at this going, we have an opportunity to be potentially get into the postseason, make a run.
So if Dallas comes to you, Lane, and they just straight up give you 12 and 20 for six, you know, no pick 39, not even a pick 70, do you just do that deal automatically, or does it depend on who's still on the board?
If I'm sitting there holding at six and Dallas walks in and they just offer 12 and 20 for six,
done.
It's a done deal. I'm doing it. I mean, I'm holding 12, 20, 24, 39. That's just a talent acquisition process that this organization could use, because that type of talent is still going to be there for them. And regardless if they make this Dallas deal or not, that 39, and what's the other one they hold, 70?
Yeah.
I'm telling you guys, I will be shocked if they pick at 39 and 70.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Yeah.
I fully anticipate them moving. And everybody thinks that everything is in a downward spiral with this team, trade down, down, down. You trade down from six if the opportunity's there. But 39 and 70 could end up being a different situation. It's going to depend on what's on the board, because I don't think anybody really has a real firm grasp yet on what's going to happen just due to trade scenarios. So it's interesting. I think 39 and 70 are going to come into play for them at some point, and it's going to depend on the board, and it's going to depend on who comes calling, because there's always going to be the pressure we saw again last year in the draft when we got into that second part of the first round, that teams just started wanting to do things. One of them being the Giants, when they could put themselves in position for Jackson Dart. So you can see that same thing happen with the Rams and Kansas City. There's going to be a lot of movement.
Well, I mean, I wrote an article prefacing this that, like, I don't think 39 is a great place to be. I think they're going to want to move one way or the other. if you play it out and you say the Browns don't, let's say they use six or whatever, and they don't take a wide receiver or tackle, they can't wait around. They have to, they're probably going to have to move to go get one, because there's a pretty steep cliff after the first six. Likewise, this world where you're 39, you don't love your options and you want to move back a little bit if you can, and then pick one of the guys you like. And that's sort of the calculus I came to on that. I think 70 is a pretty good spot to be in, but I could obviously see them moving. And the other thing is, like, if you trade down, it allows you to trade back up. I mean, obviously, last year everybody made a big point of, you know, they obviously made the biggest trade of the draft by moving down from 2 to 5. They also moved up to go get Sanders, for example. So having the ability to have more picks allows you to be just move in period. So, you know, in 2017, obviously they moved up to go get David Njoku as an example. So they will move up when they like the guy. It's just a question of where do they feel like the price is and how this is playing out. I still think in general, picks are going to be sort of priced to move in this draft overall, which is going to create a whole lot of trading. I think there's going to be a ton of it. So we'll see where they end up.
Some interesting ideas emerging in the chat with BendUp52. Suggesting a Rams trade that gives us 13 and 29 for 6 and 107. That might be interesting as well to the brass in Berea. You know, I wrote about it this morning in the Bloviation. Yeah, Berea is getting a reputation, right, as Mr. Trade Down. And I think that there's a very logical reason for that, which is the Deshaun Watson trade, right? You lost all those draft picks, so you need a lot of different you need to fill a lot of holes that were left after you traded all those draft picks away. But, you know, doesn't he open himself up for an easy criticism that he refuses to sort of take the talent that's there, you know, at number six, you're trading down to 12 and 20 and whatever, you know, after doing that again last year. I've got trade down PTSD, you know, from this team over the course of the last 30 years. And I don't think it's because the trade downs were a bad idea. I just think it's that personnel evaluation was horrible over the years. So I guess my concern is that the Browns are becoming, you know, extremely predictable in how they behave on draft day.
Smart. Smart is a good change. I like Smart. I would like him to do Smart more often. I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, you can go back to the Julio Jones trade. Great trade. They completely botched the picks. Let's compare it to what they did last year. They traded from 2 to 5. They got 36, and they got a first-round pick. The Jacksonville Jaguars took Travis Hunter, who did nothing and got hurt. The Browns got Mason Graham, who looks like a stud. Not only does he look like a stud, and there are people who don't like him because he's not an offensive player, there is nobody in this class that touches Mason Graham as a defensive tackle. Like, there's one of the things I think the Browns do a reasonably good job of is foreseeing what is coming. So they took Mason Graham, and basically for the next 18 months, maybe somebody will grossly overperform expectations, which is fine. That will happen. But in terms of just a raw evaluation, Mason Graham may be the best defensive tackle we're going to see until 2027, maybe longer than that. So you address that, you future-proof your line. They get Quinshon Judkins, who is anyone going to question that Quinshon Judkins would be running back 2 in this class? Hell, I'll put it this way. Dylan Sampson will be running back 2 in this class. The Browns took 2 running backs. They got Dylan Sampson in round 4, which I thought was a great value. I didn't really consider Dylan Sampson because I figured he's not going to be available on day 3 when I would have taken a running back. So it comes down to results. You can criticize. I will criticize the Browns for not doing enough in terms of premium positions. Linebacker and running backs only go so far, but when you get results, when you get Mason Graham, when you get Carson Swisher, when you get Quinshon Judkins, when you get Harold Fannin, and that's your first 4 picks, you can repeat that again. Like, everybody will hail him as a brilliant tactician at that point and stop worrying about this. And the other part is, if your contention is you don't trust Andrew Berry and this group to evaluate talent, all the more reason you should want them to take more swings and not put all their eggs in one proverbial basket, because then you're highlighting your risk. You're saying, I don't trust this guy to evaluate talent, and I want him to put more on one single pick. Seems like a bad idea. Now, the other point I would make is people who don't like Jed Wills, I'll repoint out Broderick Jones for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was picked 14th overall in his draft, and they've gotten even less out of him than the Browns did with Jed. So there's plenty to criticize with Barry. But I think you have to be reasonable in terms of how you evaluate what he's doing. But more importantly, get more assets. As long as you're winning those trades and you're making use of the assets, you're going to be happy with the return on investment. And especially since one of the things most people are sitting there clamoring for is that not only did the Browns trade down, but he somehow manages to finagle a 2027 first round pick in the process. And there's almost like an expectation that if he doesn't do that, there's going to be some part of the fan base that's going to be disappointed.
Well, Barry talks about PTSD and trading down. You have to look at the state of your roster and see where it's at. And they can talk about, well, we need this, we need that. We got to trade down and accumulate this to get more talent. Yeah, you need to accumulate talent, not just talent to play the game, but talent that helps you achieve and they overachieve. And the Deshaun Watson trade is something that just rippled down this organization to where it is today. And not having those picks, that opportunity for those, that top quality pick in each year, and the quarterback that you got has been a failure to date, you have to rebuild yourself. And it's almost like going from the bottom up, because you traded all the picks and you don't have a quarterback. So it's a big process. And then you go to a situation now where now you have a new coaching staff and you have different thoughts, you have different ideas. Your general manager has even commented about the offense and a system that they now will have. That should tell you what was going on mentally there, and they didn't have faith and trust, and it makes me really surprised that they stuck with that situation as long as they did. Agree with it or not, obviously, they had issues with it, they being the upper management of the Cleveland Browns. And just the way they talk now tells you that now we got an offensive direction and we're going to do these things. So you should be now, you're coming out. Last year was the beginning of coming out of the Deshaun Watson darkness and what it did to the organizational structure when it comes to talent. And this in year two, yeah, you want that top quality pick, but sometimes when you have just a situation where you have holes and you got that quality that may be a quarter step behind that, it's something you have to look at. They did a phenomenal job in the draft last year. I'm curious to see now what happens with this coaching staff, with that talent, and with the talent that's going to be coming in, that this coaching staff is going to be involved with that selection, telling them that we need this, we're looking at this, we need something like this, to see how that meshes together as an organizational fit, and for them to continue that upward trend with the structure and talent. And right now, all you can say is that you pick 6 and 24, you're going to get it. You trade down to 12, 20, and everything else, you're going to get it. You may end up with extra talent in that deal. So it's going to be interesting just to see how it plays out. And I don't have much of a problem with where Andrew Berry's at. I think he's going to make a call. That organization is going to be behind it, that head coach, and it's going to be what they want to do. So it's time. Let's play ball and see what happens.
The other part about this is what picks allow you to do. You don't just have to use them to take players. Like, the Browns have obviously traded for Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, Titus Howard, Za'Darius Smith, and veterans that could help you out. But look at what the Rams just did with picks. They had the ability, they have two picks, and so they trade one of those picks and get one of the best corners in the league. So if the Browns continue to keep this gravy trade rolling and suddenly they figure something out, let's say Shador Sanders figures it out and is a pretty good quarterback, and all of a sudden the Browns have multiple picks next year. Well, there may be some guy sitting out there, wide receiver or something that is out there that Andrew Berry covets, and they have an extra pick, hopefully not three of them and $250 million, but just one, that can make that big play and get the premium player that's hopefully going to elevate them and allow them to do what the Cincinnati Bengals did, what the Rams did. So Picks just give you more options on how to attack roster issues.
All right. Question from BendUp52 says, do you guys think the Browns will stick with the agent Raz guidelines they've used the past 6 years or so? Or does Munkin or Midas need Podesta change it? Thanks, Jess. Go Browns. We all know Jack Duffin does great analysis on the age and Raz guidelines. Do we think those are getting bent a little bit as time goes on with Andrew Berry? Pete?
Well, I mean, look, there are certain things that are just smart. Taking young, athletic, highly productive football players is just how you could operate. Like, the idea that they should go away from that is stupid. Like, that's just it. The goal of the draft, particularly if we're talking the first round, your goal in this or basically any field or any sport or whatever is to find prodigies. Prodigies do not stick around in college until they're 23 and 24. They are out fast. In fact, if you look at weird, like potentially anecdotal, but still interesting history for the people who like Jordan Tyson, if you look at wide receivers who have stayed in 4 years of college, and you look at how, like, if you were to think off the top of your head and you'd have to go do some research, you'd find out that the best receiver in the NFL who stayed for 4 years of college is Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith is maybe in the 20s. All the guys that are like ahead of him are either guys that were found weirdly late, like Puka Nacua, or they're guys who are 3 years and out, because that's what prodigies do. So you're not going to change that. You're not going to start drafting, or you sure as hell better not draft 24-year-old players and go, this is smart, because it's not. There's reams of data that tell you this is a bad way to operate. Like, think what you will, but like Eric DaCosta is like coming out and, you can get into a whole thing about labor and player empowerment, but ultimately he's right about the idea of saying that, like, from a pure draft standpoint, these guys staying in college longer is better for me, because I want to get these guys younger. I want to get them earlier into playing against guys that are better, so the development curve is stronger. Like, that part should not change. If it does, I will be pissed at Todd Monken if he's part of the influence. I don't think it's going to happen, because I think this is what teams are going to do. Continue to take age. The other part, I think people misunderstand how age is construed. Everybody looks at age as this very set in stone, they're going to have to take somebody who's 21. Yeah, that's super helpful, but like, they are going to consider it how good the player is. So it's folded into everything else. It's weighed along with the other stuff. So, like, you know, I have people telling me, well, no, they'll never take Max Ihonatiur, or they'll never take Kalen Redledge, because these guys will be 23 in the fall, you know, as if that is a death knell for these guys. It's part of the calculation, but like, this is by no means old. Certainly, if they were 21, that'd be great. But like, you don't have that opportunity. So if that's the talent they covet, they're gonna have to take these guys and roll with it. And NIL does not change the equation at all. NIL highlights my point. NIL keeps guys in longer. You know who's still there and thriving? 21-year-old guys. Now they're doing it. 20 and 21-year-old guys are now doing it against 25 and 26-year-old guys. It just makes them look even better. It proves the point that you want to take younger guys, not rely on older. Them staying in college longer hurts their development, or it took them this long to get good at college players, and that comes with a heavy amount of risk. So you're still seeing this. You're still seeing 20-year-old guys and 21-year-old guys leave early. And no one is find me the guy who is saying, no, I'm just staying purely for NIL and not because my talent isn't where I needed to be. Like, if you want to point to Trinidad Chambliss, that's fine. I would tell you that Trinidad Chambliss was not going nearly as high as some people thought they were. So it made a whole lot of sense for him to try to stay in college as long as possible. Everybody else is leaving.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about a scenario that concerns me a little bit. I understand the rationale for trading down for the Cleveland Browns. That seems to be considered to be a likely outcome. But won't Arizona and potentially the New York Giants play hell with that scenario potentially? You know, taking these deals to go down in the first round, or maybe a 2027 first round draft pick, something along those lines. The question, I guess, is, you know, do you see a scenario where Andrew Berry has no choice but to make a pick at number six?
Like, sure. I believe that's absolutely a possibility, and I know for a fact that it's something that they believe it could end up being what it is. It's picking at six isn't the worst thing in the world here. There's going to be top quality talent. You just got to select, you know, your flavor. Are you going with the receiver? Are you going to go offensive tackle? Are you going to take a defensive back or pass rusher? Those things aren't out of the equation. It's not like they shut the door on any of those things. This thing's wide open. That's why these first five picks, well, we know who's going one. And, you know, who could be going two through five. This whole thing gets all shaked up. And you don't know now. You don't, because of the, with what the Giants are doing and what the Rams want to do and what the Chiefs want to do. Arizona wanting them to move down and then get themselves in position. This thing could be like the biggest puzzle you ever saw by the time it's done. Or it could be simply everybody just goes right down the line and just picks the guy they want. You just don't know. But the opportunity's there, and I am positive that the Browns already have themselves positioned to take the pick at six if that's what plays out.
Fumble wants to know the over-under six trades in the first round. That'd be a lot of trades, but I guess I could see it this year.
It's already a two. You already have two.
Or a third of the way there.
All right, so you guys are taking the over?
Yeah,
I think it's possible. I think it's very possible. This is the year, is the type of year that could happen.
You know, the perception I have, let's say the Browns are stuck at six and can't make some sort of a deal that they find good to move down, and they take Carnell Tate, which seems to be the default solution or has been for a significant period of time. Seems to me, just my perception, is that people are already bored with that. You know, bored with the notion of taking Carnell Tate, you know, excited about the possibility of taking best player available regardless of position. How likely do you think that is, Pete, at this point in time, that if they were picking at six, Tate was available, but maybe a Caleb Downs was available or somebody else that they thought was a better player? What do you think the odds are that they would go away from the positional need?
I think Tate would be the favorite. I think that's my default position. And look, here's my thing. People are bored of the Browns taking Ohio State players. Good. We'll just stop doing it, and I don't have to hear about this crap anymore, and we can move on to other things and start taking players from other schools. Because if we've gotten so many Ohio State players at this point, Andrew Berry has scratched the itch so many times that we're now bored of it. Good. Then I don't have to hear about, oh, the Browns never take anyone from Columbus when they're bored of them and try to replace them with a running back from Notre Dame or anything else. So, look, my handicap at this point is trade down, followed by Carnell Tate, followed by Caleb Downs. I think I think that's the most likely play at this point, but I'm ready for anything. You know, Spencer Fano certainly could be in the conversation at that point. I get it. But I think Tate is easy. Maybe that's part of the equation, that he is easy and feels safe. And maybe some of the concern is lack of potential upside, which I get. But look, if they get Tate, great. They're a really good receiver in my view. And now you got to go time to figure out how you're going to deal with offensive tackle.
You talk about Tate, and you know, it doesn't seem flashy enough for a team like the Browns or its fan base. You're attacking a critical area of need with a quality player to help solidify and build your program. And that's the problem here, is that there's such an expectation that even when they're in position and grab the top talent, it's still not enough. So if it's Tate at six, it's Tate at six. You got the receiver. If it's somebody else, it's for the tackle, you that's another area you have to go. But I believe that you can get the best player available at six. And if you feel that's the wide receiver, then that's what you do. You got 24 and you can move around and position yourself for a tackle, because you know the first six tackles, I would say, or so, have the opportunity to be very good. So I'm not losing any sleep over it if they don't go tackle at six. I just think that at six, you have to get a guy who is going to be a dynamic for you. He may not look like a dynamic sitting there right now with a name and a selection process, but you want that player that it can be that dynamic that elevates you. And that's when you get into these discussions about Tate or a Lemon or a Tyson or a defensive back, a Downs or a Styles. You need that dynamic for you if it's going to fit and do what you're looking to do. And that's why this door isn't closed on them doing anything with these names that we're talking about, because they have areas where they could utilize players like that. So as it stands right now, it's still pretty wide open for them. And everybody calls Carnell Tate the safe pick because he's just consistent and just makes plays. But people want to say, well, they don't do a lot of yards after catch and this and that. That's not what Ohio State's game is. That's not what they do. If you look at the average route run in college, Carnell Tate is right up there for the average length yardage-wise of what a route is that they run. He hasn't had that ability to show what he can do underneath. Whereas you look at some of these other guys, and you see that on film like crazy, that they just quickly separate and just get open and make yardage. So, it's the flavor of receiver that you're looking for, because there's a couple completely different types in this draft. You got the Lemons and the Concepciones. I like Lemon and Concepcion. And guys like that who just get open. You know, they're greasy, and they just make it happen. In case of Lemon, he plays bigger than what his size is. I think this guy's going to be outstanding. As far as Tate's concerned, it's not what the game has been. So you can only evaluate and anticipate where that role goes and what he does, because you know everything that he does well. It's those other things, other aspects, that underneath stuff that you don't see from him. And is that his fault? Probably not, because of the system they played in. So that's what makes six interesting, because is that the kind of guy that you're looking for at six? Is that going to be enough of that dynamic that you need?
I think the conversation as it pertains to that top receiver, and let's say it's between Tate and Lemon. I don't know that it is, but let's say it is Carnell Tate has not been, maybe he will be, but has not been a high volume receiver, where Mekhi Lemon had been the offense. Yep. And if the Browns are content to say that we want a guy to plug in and we have a whole lot of targets and touches to give him, I totally get it. The other hand, they may look at this thing and go, Harold Fannin's our high-volume target guy, and Jerry Jeudy's going to balance a little bit of that, that we don't need Carnell Tate to be a guy who's going to get, you know, 150 targets or whatever it is. I think a lot of that is obviously a question for Todd Monken and what he really wants, but they need somebody to be that high-volume target guy that you can just consistently feed over and over and over and just work your way down the field that need be, that makes the, you know, that consistently move the chains. If you want Carnell Tate, even though we're sort of looking at him as sort of this high floor guy, his big contribution is the fact that he can make big plays. He can make the explosive plays. He's not going to make them as often, but the fact that he can get those 20 plus yard passing plays, or that all of a sudden you can grind over the top touchdown to Carnell Tate, which is what he did at Ohio State. You have to figure out philosophically what your offense is. I'm not saying that Harold Fannin can do that. I mean, I think there's a world where he absolutely can be that guy. But that's a big reason why I think Lemon is such a good player and a good fit, because I think they've got the targets to give him. Harold Fannin is a really good compliment. Jerry Jeudy then becomes sort of what we are talking about Carnell Tate is in this equation, where he can be more of a big play threat rather than a consistent target guy. So, you know, how about the Browns feel? Do they feel like they're going to be real fine and converting first downs and keeping drives going, and they want a big play guy? Not that Tate can't move the chains, but still. Or do they sit there and we need a guy who's going to consistently keep this drive going? The quarterback's going to know where he is at all times. The ball's going to go there. We're going to keep this thing going, and we can make other guys do it. Isaiah Bond, Jerry Jeudy, or whoever. I think that is a big part of that question when it comes to the wide receiver choice.
Couple of other questions I have, you know, one is let's assume it's Tate at six, or they take a wide receiver at six.
That's what Barry wants. Go ahead.
That's fine. He's an Ohio State kid, obviously. But you've almost won me over to the limit. You almost have. But at any rate, if you take Tate at six, does that pick at 24 absolutely have to be an offensive lineman? Do you absolutely have to take an offensive lineman or trade for one or whatever at 24, given the state of this team's offensive line?
No, but it does raise the stakes a lot. Because all of a sudden, if you're saying, you know, let's say they take Emmanuel McNeil Warren, you know, the safety from Toledo, who they allegedly like quite a bit. I have questions there, but whatever. Let's say they take him. If they do that, they better have a plan from 39 on how they're going to get that tackle, because it's not going to be them at 39. So if they make that move and they say, no, the talent is just too good, we have to have player X, then they have to have a plan. If not, then yeah, you have to think in terms of getting that tackle, because otherwise they are waiting and potentially trying to put a Band-Aid on this thing, or taking a sort of a riskier, lower probability play, like maybe the Markel Bell or something like that, or the kid from Boston College or something like that, where they're sitting there going, well, we feel really good about this kid and we're willing to take him in the third or fourth round. I think that raise a whole lot of eyebrows, justifiably, because it doesn't feel like you are making this a priority, which it needs to be. But I mean, that's the play they have to make. And obviously it's one where it's a high risk venture, which could cost Andrew Berry a job in the end.
You know, I see it at six, if you draft a wide receiver, the offensive tackle thing just becomes more highlighted, and you don't want to get too far past that. I mean, you have to end up doing something at 24, moving up, or doing something with the 39 to move, because you're going to have a tackle. And the other thing in the equation here that nobody talks about is that the Browns are interested in adding another dynamic at the tight end position, whoever that's going to be. So right now, it's a wide open thing. You assume tight end and offensive tackle are going to be your first two picks that they do in this draft, and I wouldn't be surprised if it does not play out that way. I believe that they're going to position themselves, regardless of what they do at 24, to get themselves in line with a tackle. And yeah, when a couple of names were mentioned, and Marco Bell was mentioned, and I can tell you that they like this guy. They like his size. They just think he's just enormous and needs some work. But again, you know, you're getting down into that area of the draft where you start going the fourth round, fifth round, something like that. You know, that talent level, there's a separation with those offense alignments. So you really want to get yourself in position for one of those top six. Not saying that Bell or the guy in Boston College couldn't become something, but what does that do for you? Does that really help solidify the issue that you have going into this draft, knowing that you need a tackle? And you can move some of these guys around that we had in free agency, fill your tackle role. You got your fan base who's saying, well, DeJuan Jones has lost 8 million pounds, so yeah, now he's at 355, and he looks healthier. The only problem is he hasn't finished the season on his feet. So, you know, it's time to get past all the hopes and wishes and aspirations and loving it players because of a name, and get down to the reality of it, that you need the talent on the field to get the job done. So I'm depending on nobody in that offensive line except for what they've acquired and put together and meshed in here. I think everything else is a crapshoot, and I still believe that you're going to see a tackle and a guard selected by this team. And if they go tackle later in this draft, I become a little worried about that and what it does for them for the future, what they're looking at from years down, not necessarily as much this year. So it's going to be interesting, and I just still believe that they're going to come out with a tackle and guard in this draft somewhere.
To me, DeJuan Jones was more polished coming out of college than Markel Bell. I think Markel Bell doesn't have the same feel in pass protection, but the problem is neither one of them is where the shit is run blocker at this point. Now, the one thing I will say for Markel Bell, and this is what gets guys fired, watching him at Pro Day was impressive. He moved really, really well. And you can talk yourself into that, and you can say, granted, he's gotten a lot better this past year, And you can say, well, we think the arrow's pointing up. It's not not dissimilar to the argument people are going to make for Monroe Freeling, mm-hmm. obviously a much later pick. But if you can get what I saw at Pro Day in terms of his aggression and movement, and you can do that consistently, great. I'm not going to buy into that and say that that's a realistic thing. All I'm saying is that don't be surprised when teams talk themselves into it.
I want to read this from the Grand John G. He said, I think fans like me are giving up on the season because of the quarterback room. Taking someone at six doesn't move the needle like acquiring hope for 2027. And I mm-hmm. think I've seen that, you know, in talking with fans and just gauging their level of interest in this year's draft. Lane, let's start with you. 2027 draft picks. Are you of the school that thinks that they are of extreme value and would be disappointed if we don't come out here with some more ammunition for 2027?
Well, I think 2027 draft, if when you look at the prospects, you can look at what you did for the 2026 and you thought there was going to be more in the top end. I believe that 2027 has the opportunity to be exceptional. I think that if you could grab yourself and accumulate another first in movement this year, you do so. I get the sentiment that fans are giving up on the season because, one, nobody knows what the Browns are going to do, and everybody believes they're going to tank for 2027, which they're not going to. They are going to try to win games. And the quarterback room, yeah, it's an issue because you're looking at a guy who hasn't played football at this level in years, and you got two guys that are coming off rookie seasons that were, you know, not good. And we can talk about chunk plays and this and that and everything else. The quarterback room right now is a mystery. It could be atrocious. It could be surprising. You just don't know. So I get the sentiment. I think that if you could position yourself to acquire in a deal a first-round pick for 2027, I think that that's a strong move for an organization, especially one such as the Browns, because it looks like at this time, that draft, that talent that's going to be there, will easily exceed this one.
Oh, not even close.
You know, you have to do what you have to do in this draft. And if you deal down and you acquire a 2027 first, I believe you do so as long as it fits. And I think that you screw around with 39 and 70 and 104, all these numbers, and make sure that you position yourself to acquire the talent that you believe in for today. Because that talent of today is supposed to be what helps generate your growth tomorrow. So getting that extra pick, I believe, would be a very smart and potentially an essential move for a team like this, because it's going to position them for, you know, that exceptional talent. Because if it plays out the way it looks like it should, it's just going to be so much deeper in talent. So why wouldn't you try to get there?
Just as an example, I think if Trevor Goosby came out of school, I think Monroe Freeling would be in the conversation at 24, and we'd never be talking about him at 12, at 6. Trevor Goosby, the left tackle from Texas, is a legitimate stud talent that's going to be in the draft next year.
Yep.
Presumably. I think that would be over. But the other part about that is this notion of giving up. Pittsburgh Steelers won the division last year. Were you afraid of Aaron Rodgers? Was he a quarterback? Were you sitting there going, oh, my God, we can't beat this guy? And he played reasonably well. He played pretty damn well the first game. Made a couple of really, really good throws. But that's what the Browns need to be afraid of. If they do well with the picks and you get just average quarterback play, sure, Sanders, if that's the guy, will most likely be the guy, is going to be the guy. If he plays reasonably well, or if Jacoby Brissett finds his way over here, if you just get average and you do well in the draft, let's say they do well with the receiver and tackle they pick, and those guys are just contributors, and they have a reasonably similar draft to the one they had last year, and the guys that they've signed pan out, Zion Johnson becomes a good player, Elton Jenkins holds up. I'm not saying the Browns are going to be in the playoffs by any stretch, but things can get very weird in this division. And we saw it last year. Everybody last year went Ravens, division lock, Bengals probably going to be right there in it. Both of them were sitting at home when the playoffs started, because that's just how it goes. and it was to the arguably worst, you know, the one of the worst quarterback rooms in the league, led by Aaron Rodgers, in a very underwhelming offense, which lost the game to the Browns because they didn't want to surrender the sack record to Myles Garrett. So, like, the notion of giving up so early is just I just don't get it.
Interesting. Yeah, I honestly I would be disappointed if they don't come out of here with some more 2027 ammunition, you know, just because I'm obsessed with getting that franchise quarterback after 30-some-odd years.
About post-traumatic stress disorder from trading down and then do the thing I said people were doing, which is be disappointed that they didn't get 2027 picks.
You know, we're sitting here talking about the 2027 first-round picks and, you know, how impressive they can be. I wouldn't get too disappointed if the Browns aren't able to get an additional first, because these teams know that too. It's going to come down to, is there a team that's just desperate enough or feels that they're a player or so away that it becomes an element that they'll do it because they just have to. They got to have a player. And that could happen here, because there's some, I'm telling you, when we start talking about players with Downs and Styles and these guys and the Baileys, there can be a team that just loses their mind and does something stupid like that. And if I'm sitting at six and I have that opportunity, I'm just like, got neon lights flashing. I'm saying, here, drop that right in this bucket. Let's go.
Well, I hope that is the case. I'm rooting for stupidity on Thursday, as long as it's not emanating from Berea. I hope someone gets desperate and gives the Browns a mother load for that number six pick. We'll see how it goes.
Here's something interesting, though. You're talking about desperation, and we're talking about a Browns quarterback room that is absolutely empty. You don't know what you have. So you're talking about desperation. You better start worrying about your quarterback room, man, and hope that Jacoby Brissett can get out of Arizona and come here like we talked about 3 months ago. That guy would be a problem solver for this organization right from the get-go, because you'd have stability at quarterback, because right now you don't know what you got. And then you got Shedeur Sanders, who everybody just hopes everything about this young guy, and he didn't have a good season, and who could have in that offense, but still, it's going to be interesting to see. But, you know, don't be too disappointed, because you still have to wake up Sunday morning and go, okay, we still got the same quarterback room, so I'm glad we got other talent, but who's under center?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we will see it all develop on Thursday, starting at 7:30 here on our YouTube, Twitch, X, whatever channels. You got it. It's the Draft Cave. You got to be there. We are going to be live from the before the draft starts all the way through to Saturday, and it's a annual tradition here at the OBR. And thank you very much, Pete and Lane, for your insight. Thanks, guys, in the chat room for your questions and comments. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to all of them today, but there are a bunch of good ones. And we will see you next week with new players available for us to talk about here on Gang of Three. Good night, everybody.
Banking has stood still for decades. Slow, clunky, and designed around its own convenience, not yours. Mercury was built to end that. Fast, elegant, and works the way you'd expect best-in-class software to work. No fighting outdated systems. No nickel and diming. Visit mercury.com to apply in minutes and experience the difference for yourself. Mercury is a fintech company, not an FDIC-insured bank. Banking services provided through Choice Financial Group and Column NA, members FDIC.